It's 8:17 on the ticket. There have been three celebrity deaths that have hit me pretty hard. The first was when the great Wayman Tisdale passed away, one of my all-time basketball sports heroes. We got to know Wayman over the years. He was just such a sweetheart of a human being, and I loved him so much that when he passed away at the all-too-early age of 44, I believe it was, I cried. And I regret not going to his public memorial in Tulsa that, a couple days later. I really regret that. The second one was when Anthony Bourdain died a couple of years ago. And I loved his show and I loved his books. And I think it hit me hard because people always, once, twice, three times a day, would come up to me, strangers. They'd say, you know, you look like Anthony Bourdain. So in a weird way, it felt like a part of me died.
Yeah.
And I remember just kind of being in mourning that whole weekend. And the third one occurred early Saturday morning when the news broke that my all-time radio idol, Larry King, had died at the age of 87 at his home in Los Angeles. He'd been battling COVID, apparently. And I loved Larry King, and I went into that profession. I was obsessed with radio when I was a kid. I was obsessed with staying up late when I was a kid. And back then, we're talking 70s and 80s, one of our chief forms of entertainment was the radio. Just had a few TV stations.
Yeah.
So after midnight, there wasn't much to watch on TV. But I wanted to stay up as late as I could. I was a night owl. And I discovered sometime late 70s, the Larry King Show on the Mutual Radio Network. And it would start around 11 or 12 my time, Central Standard Time. And it would go until 4:30 in the morning, I think. And it was 4 or 5 hours of Larry doing guests. And then usually the last hour was Open Phone America, where he took calls from everywhere around the country about anything, whatever you want. And he would never go to a caller by name. It was always East Lansing, Michigan, hello. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, hello.
It sounds weird now, but at the time, that's pretty cool just to hear a talk show host talking to the entire country.
I loved it. I felt like I was in touch and in tune with all of America.
Sure.
And you're hearing from these people in Billings, Montana, and Yuma, Arizona, and just all over the place. And
I think he was just making up those names. They were all like people that were just calling from
the other production studio.
And one of the great things about Larry is no matter what people brought up, he could talk about it.
Yeah.
It didn't matter the topic. He was a huge sports fan, and those were my favorite calls when someone would ask him a sports question, and he could talk sports as well as anybody, entertainment, politics. He was so well-versed in everything that nothing would ever catch him off guard. He had a good rapport with the callers. He didn't suffer fools. So if you were screwing around, he would move right along. he ran a show like a master, and he was so good at every element of it. So this is what it would sound like each night. This is from about 1982. This is how the show would open. And when I heard this, I knew I was in for greatness.
Gosh.
From the nation's capital, Mutual Radio presents The Larry King Show, network radio's most listened to coast-to-coast talk program, featuring guests from around the world and calls from all across America. And now, network radio's number one interviewer, Larry King.
Thank you, Fred Lowry, and good evening, everybody. On this Friday night, Saturday morning across America, this is The Larry King Show, coast-to-coast on Mutual. Our very special guest tonight, we'll meet her in just a moment, is Sarah McClendon, who heads the McClendon News Service, an operation here in Washington since 1944. She is one of the finer Washington correspondents, and everyone in America knows her who has ever watched a presidential press conference. Sarah McClendon, in a moment.
Such a great voice.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a three-pack-a-day voice.
Sure.
But what a great voice, and what a calming yet, you know, big presence that voice had. He wasn't a shouter.
No.
He was conversational, yet he was authoritative. And he was just a the perfect radio talk show host.
Well, apparently he knew something about just about everything, because that's what he would do every day, is just read.
Yeah.
If he wasn't on the air, he was reading about something going on, be it sports or news or whatever.
And I noticed, even when I was a kid, he was a great interviewer, and he would never prepare anything beyond maybe the first question.
Mm-hmm.
He said sometimes he would come up with the first question, but he built every question off of the response he got.
Yeah.
And so he would just maybe ask the first question, and then whatever he would say, the guest would respond. Larry would build the interview from there. He didn't write down 30 questions for each guest. He just had this feel of where to take an interview, where to go. And I loved it because all of his questions were very short, succinct. He said, "I never learned anything while I was talking."
Hmm.
So he wanted to give the guest as much time as possible. He didn't need to let all of us know what he knew. In fact, he would go into interviews not knowing anything. And he said that's what made him a good interviewer, was that he was curious.
Yeah.
And so his questions were short and to the point. He said another thing that he always wanted to do was make a guest comfortable. He said, you don't get much out of them if they're not.
Right.
So everybody that went on with him always, you know, for the most part, said the same thing. They loved going on with him because he made them feel comfortable, and they knew they were going to get some tough questions, but he wasn't going to be mean. He wasn't going to try to make them look bad. And that's why he got everybody. When nobody in the world could get Frank Sinatra on his show, this is, you know, later when he went to CNN, he got Sinatra.
Well, I think it was Sinatra's last big interview.
Yeah. Marlon Brando did one interview ever, and he did Larry King.
Yeah, not the one where they kissed at the end?
Kissed on the mouth at the end of it. It's very weird.
But see, that thing about the interviewing, that's such a simple rule, but that is a conversation. When you go talk to someone, you don't have a list of questions if
right.
you're just talking to them. So it's a very simple thing, but, you know, at the same time, brilliant to make good radio.
Yeah, and you got to be a master at being able to do that.
Right.
Because some people can go into an interview or a conversation with a friend and still stumble around with the questions if they're not
sure.
really, if they don't have that Larry King ability.
Yeah.
The other ability that I just fell in love with when I was listening to his overnight radio show, his ability to tell a story, best storyteller that I've ever heard on radio. He was a master at the slow burn. And I went back and I listened to a lot of his old famous stories from the Mutual show over the weekend. There was the baby bumper story. There was the story about the skipped record. And there was the Carvel story. And all of them were 15 minutes, 12 to 15 minutes. And he was just great at being descriptive and setting things up and then hitting you with the punch and even doing his voices. He could change his voice a little bit. And so we don't have time to play a whole 12 to 15 minute story, but this is the beginning of the Carvel story. This is Larry and his buddies' childhood in Brooklyn, and they're going to take a road trip because they've heard this story that Carvel, an ice cream store, was selling 3 scoops for 15 cents, and they couldn't believe it.
Larry King. Not many things have happened in the life of yours truly. One of the most interesting and one of the most requested from listeners is the famed Carvel story. Well, we did it on a radio show recently, and we repeat it for you now in its entirety.
Jolly goof fans. Okay, this is a true story. It happened when we were kids, 17 years old. The year was 1951, and the time was November. And as you know, as was discussed earlier, kids of today, they talk about various things that are very important. They get into relevant things in life. When we were kids, we didn't quite handle it that way. First, we would get home from school or work and eat very quickly in order to get out of the house, in order to get down to the corner, in order to get the lamppost. Because the first guy that got the lamppost has something to lean against. Second guy could put a hand against the lamppost, third a hand. But if you got down fourth or fifth, you blew the whole thing. Anyway, on this particular night, it was a Monday night in November, Sandy Koufax, who later went on to become a famous pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Herbie Cohen, who is now one of the outstanding sales consultants in America outside of Chicago, and myself, we were all kids in the neighborhood. Me, Herbie, and Sandy are standing around discussing one of the major topics of the day, which was the relative degree of our liking of ice cream. Herbie was a big Breyers man, I liked Borden's, and Sandy liked Carvel, and we were discussing it.
He has that great,
what happened?
That great cadence, and The story is funny because Herbie, I think, says, hey, Carvel is selling 3 scoops for 15 cents. And Larry said, that's impossible. Nobody can sell 3 scoops for 15 cents. So the next 10 minutes, he describes them driving to this Carvel in New Haven, Connecticut. They get in all sorts of trouble. They get home. Herbie's dad is so ticked off at them. He's screaming at the kids, why did you even go to New Haven, Connecticut? And Herbie said, because we heard that they have a Carvel there that sells 3 scoops for 15 cents. And Herbie's dad goes, that's impossible. They can't sell 3 scoops for 15 cents.
That's why we win.
And that's the punch of the story. And it just, he was so great at that. And then he made the transition to CNN when CNN was getting big. Ted Turner hired him for $100,000 a year. Huge money in the 80s. Huge money now. But in the 80s, when you consider that Larry King ended up making $7 million a year at the height of his power at CNN, Turner got him for a pretty good price, I think, to start.
That's a pretty good investment there.
And he then went on to set a world record for the longest running primetime show in the same time slot. It was 8 o'clock every night, our time. And that became America's living room. It was, he was the Johnny Carson of his day, you know?
Yeah.
You tuned in every night to see what incredibly famous, important person was on there that you were going to get to know better because of the way Larry interviewed them.
Boy, and he had everybody.
Everybody.
World leaders, top athletes, actors, singers, Mick Jagger to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
I mean, he had
every president, anybody you can name, and they all wanted to go on with him.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some signature moments. There were some crazy moments, some fights, arguments. There were a few moments later in his career when he maybe started to slip a little bit that went viral. Of all the viral moments that I saw this weekend, this one was the funniest. This is Larry interviewing DJ Khaled.
Khaled.
Yeah.
DJ Khaled. And it's funny because here's DJ Khaled who's just opening his soul to Larry, and then Larry, an example of how to the point he is with his questions and how the interview can turn on a dime.
Good morning, you don't think, what am I going to make today? But you want to be a billionaire.
Yeah, well, of course, I'm a hustler, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to always think nonstop how to get this money to take care of my mother, my father, my team, and not just that, to live good. You know, I want the house on the water. I want the nice car. I want the nice watch. I want to stay fresh. I want to stay clean. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with that. It's you should strive for greatness.
How did you gain all the weight?
The hell?
Yeah, well, that's great, but
how'd you gain the weight?
So funny.
What about the time you had with Seinfeld when Seinfeld was leaving his show after, what, 10 seasons?
I didn't want to play that, but since you bring it up, I guess we have to. I just think this makes Larry look bad. It was
it did make him look bad.
All right,
the thing is that this was when, and people made fun of Larry for this, and Seinfeld just totally jumped on him for it, but I thought it was a funny moment. Like, I thought it's not that big a deal. Larry's old. It's okay. Play it.
Lasted how long?
9 years. 180 episodes.
You gave it up, right?
I did, sir.
They didn't cancel you. You canceled them.
You're not aware of this?
No, I'm asking you.
You think I got canceled? Are you under the impression that I got canceled?
Have I hurt you, Jerry?
I thought that was pretty well documented. Is this still CNN?
Don't most shows go down a little?
Most people do also. Yeah, no, I went off the air. I was the number one show on television, Larry.
You were.
Do you know who I am?
Jewish guy, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay.
75 million viewers last episode.
Boy, you don't take it so bad.
Well, that's a big difference between being canceled and being number one.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
Jeez.
B-movie opens. B-movie opens.
A resume in here for
B-movie
me?
B-movie opens tomorrow. We'll be right back.
And it became a huge viral moment, and Seinfeld made a big you know, joke out of it, which was great. I thought Seinfeld capitalized on it well.
Seinfeld tweeted this weekend, always loved Larry King, will miss him. The canceled bit was just me having fun with his little mistake, nothing more or less.
Right.
R.I.P. Larry.
Yeah. It was nothing that was...
he loved Larry.
Nothing that was angry, truly angry.
So when I first got into radio, first job was at KRLD where George had started, and one of my first shifts was overnight board op, just like Cray Tray. I started as an overnight board op.
Yeah.
And we carried the Larry King Show. It may have been rebranded by Westwood One at that point. Mm-hmm. It may have still been on Mutual. I can't remember. But I thought, wow, this is great.
You work with him.
I now get paid to listen to the Larry King Show. And at this point, I had just started my radio career. I had already met him because I grew up worshiping him, thought he was a radio god. And in 1982, I believe this is, he announced on his show, July 24th, we're going to be doing our show on the road in Dallas, Texas, at so-and-so radio station on top of the Reunion Tower. Remember, there was a radio station
right
up there?
Yeah.
It's like an FM music station or something like that.
Yeah.
They had a studio up there, and they were going to do the show from that studio. And I thought, oh, my God. So I drove down there, went up the elevator to the top of the Reunion Tower ball, walked in. There were about, I would say, 20 or 30 people there, and they had just folding chairs set out, and they had his table up there and microphone. His producer was at a side table, and I got a seat there, and he walked in and sat down, and I watched him do the whole show that night. I was by far the youngest kid in that crowd.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there was any other 17-year-old kid up there. But I couldn't believe I was watching him do the show in person, and during one break, he stood up and he kind of walked out into the crowd down the aisle. And I stood up. I said, I got to say hi to him. And I walked up. And I said, Larry, hi, my name's Craig Miller. I'm going to North Texas next year to study broadcasting. I want to get into radio. He goes, oh, that's great. That's great. And I said, would you mind if I hosted the next segment? And he looked at me and smiled. And he goes, talk to my producer. And then walked on.
See, he was willing to do it. Sounded like a good idea to him.
Did his breath smell like cigarettes?
It smelled like strawberries. It was perfect.
Really?
Yeah.
Junior's greatest moments.
When he's smoking and talking at the same time.
I think he had strawberry banaca.
I love the fact that, I remember when the CNN show first went on the air, I think he smoked on the air back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On television.
Yeah. I always thought that was cool.
I did too. That was the last show I remember them doing that on. Do you remember any other talk show where they still were smoking and interviewing people?
No.
I will say this about Larry King, 87 years, he lived a full life. He was married 9 times. He had 5 kids. He was a media giant, the king of his industry. He was known around the world. He was arrested.
What?
He had that mugshot, very famous mugshot, if you want to Google that, from when he was young. He lived a very full, very long, very colorful, very impactful life. Rest in peace, my hero, Larry King.
Amen.
All right, 8:35 on the ticket. Coming up next,
we have a visit from a very, very big personality.